Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine, about breaking the cycle of debt. Paying down credit card balances is a logistical and emotional challenge. And this is by Jean Chatsky, to the rescue. The problem. How do you break a lingering bad money habit? New Jersey couple Gail O'Donnell, 54, an insurance agency account rep, and her husband Danny, 60, a training supervisor, have carried credit card debt for more than half of their 27-year marriage. Twice they refinanced their mortgage, pulling out cash to pay off their cards. Twice they charged those cards back up again. Compounding the problem, Gail often felt she didn't have Danny's help. He's the spendthrift, and I'm the penny pincher, she wrote me. Now, though, he was willing to work on it with her, so she was eager to dive in. The advice. In 1922, credit card balances climbed to $986 billion, a record high. About $70,000 of that debt was the O'Donnells. Gail and Danny needed a nuts-and-bolts strategy to free up cash and pay down debt. But their challenge was emotional, too. To escape their cycle of debt, the O'Donnells had to understand why they behaved as they did with money. My plan for them was, step one, brass tacks. One thing in the O'Donnells' favor was that they were earning a good living. But their money wasn't showing up in any savings, no emergency fund, no contributions to retirement accounts. They weren't sure where their money was going. When I had them start tracking their spending, food emerged as a primary culprit. They would spend $1,600 in the prior month alone, more than $50 a day. We talked about dinner at 5 p.m. when we're both starving. Then we go to the grocery store or we go out, Gail said. They also liked to spend on their two children, both in their 20s. That's typical. A new Bankrate survey found that 68% of parents of adult children made financial sacrifices on their child's behalf. I walked Gail and Danny through meal planning tips. Shop once a week. Stock up on discounted non-perishables, and use tonight's leftovers as tomorrow's lunch. I also started them on a debt repayment plan, having them attack their highest interest rate credit card balances first, and suggesting they hunt for a card with a 0% balance transfer offer. For detailed repayment tactics, read Debt-Defying Credit Card Strategies in the May Bulletin. Step 2, financial therapy. Most people carry beliefs about money they internalized by the age of 10, says financial therapist Rick Koller, co-author of Coupleship, Inc., From Financial Conflict to Financial Intimacy. When the O'Donnells met with Kaler later on online, they discussed how their beliefs might be holding them back. For example, while Gail believes she doesn't merit the money she has, Danny harbors no such doubts about his money. Gail said that when he wants to spend money, she'll object. He'll do it anyway, and conflict will ensue. His prescription for Danny was to make a practice of not making expenditures before thinking about whether they would be helpful for him or his family. The O'Donnells also described the beliefs driving them to help their children financially. Not doing so, Gail said, would make her feel guilty and scared. An inability to give the children money, said Danny, would make him feel like we failed as parents. Kaler challenged their thoughts with a different idea. Their financial support could be damaging in the long run. It makes the child dependent, he said, and it hurts the parents because those resources could help them dig out of the hole. The outcome? I enrolled Gail in Finance Fix, my online budgeting program for women. She's attending weekly Zoom sessions, which helps keep their spending on track. And Danny is supportive. In under 2 months, Gail says, they freed up about $5,000, which they used to clear their most expensive cards. And for the first time in a long time, they're in this together. Now we're going to move over to AARP, the bulletin, for an article that we probably all have needed at one time or another. I know I wished I had. And this is How the Pros Fall Safely. Two Hollywood stuntmen share their tricks for avoiding injury when a sudden tumble occurs. All right, here we go. And I'll try to describe the pictures. I think they're described in the text. In the new movie, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, you may well see Harrison Ford perform dangerous physical feats, just as he had in previous Indiana Jones films. Except you won't. Thanks to his professional stuntman, Ford, 80, has been able to play the charming adventurer for more than 40 years. If only each of us had a stunt double for everyday hazards. Most people trip and lose their balance, said physical therapist Shanta Niamanda, clinical director at the Physical Therapy and Balance Center in Chastain, Georgia. Falls are a leading cause of fatal and non-fatal injuries among older adults. Every year, about 36 million falls are reported among people over 65, about 3 million of whom wind up in the ER. We asked two pros who stunted for Ford on the last Indiana Jones film, Stuart F. Wilson, 61, and Thomas DuPont, 52, to share their tips on how to fall safely. So we're going to start with a sideways fall. Although, I must admit that sometimes we don't have time to think about this, but maybe if we stick it in our brains, it'll come out at the right time. This is the number one cause of hip fractures, and the mortality risk of patients over age 65 with hip fractures is 3 times higher than the general population. If your feet get tangled, do bend your knees, tuck your chin, and keep your head lifted. Keep your arms close to your chest. Allow yourself to go limp and collapse onto the outside of your bottom thigh, and then roll onto your torso and upper back. Don't fall on the bony part of your hip, which is how hip fractures happen. And don't plant your arm down when landing, which could easily break your shoulder, elbow, or wrist. Now we have the backward fall. If a slick floor or an overly affectionate toddler or a kitty cat sends you flying, do stumble backward, something we often do naturally when we're losing our balance. As you do, tuck your chin to your chest and try to get your body, especially your butt, closer to the ground. Bend your knees into a deep squat so you land on your butt, then round your spine and roll onto your back and shoulders. Keep your arms by your side, out of harm's way. Don't look up or extend your neck, which will guarantee that your head hits the ground first. And don't try to stick your arms out behind you to catch yourself, as that will likely result in a broken wrist. And next, the forward fall. If you trip and fall forward with the ground rushing up to meet your face, do go limp. Bend your knees and angle them to one side and tuck your chin to your chest, keeping your head tilted away from the ground as you fall. Aim to land on the outside of your thigh. As soon as you hit the ground, keep the movement going as you roll onto the side of your torso and upper back. Think about curling your body as you roll, Wilson says. DuPont agrees. When you do it this way, you don't even have to use your hands, he says. Don't go stiff and stick your arms out straight in front of you. Falling onto an outstretched hand is the most common cause of wrist fractures in people over 50. You're also at risk for breaking a forearm or dislocating an elbow or shoulder. So the first rule of falling down is relax. Easier said than done. Sometimes when you begin to fall, you tense up and start to panic. And that's how you get hurt, says Wilson, who trained with a former protege of Bruce Lee's. One trick is to relax into the fall, says DuPont, who owned his self-taught skills with Tangsudo, a Korean martial art. Don't try to stop the fall, especially when you're older. There's a much greater risk of your bones breaking under this type of pressure. The goal here is to spread the impact of the fall over as much of your body as possible, using more cushioned areas such as your butt, thighs, and upper back to soften the fall. Please don't get up yet. Falling down hurts both our bodies and our pride. A lot of times, our egos make us want to jump up and let everyone know we are okay, DuPont says, noting that it's something he's been guilty of many times. You want to shake it off and keep going because your adrenaline is surging. But the action hormone can also trick you into not noticing that you're hurt. Take a few minutes to assess any cuts, bumps, and possible breaks to reduce your risk of further injury. If you pop up right away and then fall again because something is broken or out of place, the second fall could be even worse, Wilson says. And Jenna Bergen Sutherland wrote this article. She is Prevention's former fitness director, and she has written for many health publications. Now we're going to look at an article titled Your Money, Fraud Watch. This is also in AARP, the Bulletin. A wallet audit. Consider these moves now before it's lost or stolen. The modern wallet should be slim, light, and modestly populated. Many of the informational items we once carried can be accessed on our phones. If stolen, an overstuffed wallet can provide crooks with information and tools that may lead to the theft that spreads far beyond the cash and the wallet that the wallet contained. Here are some steps to consider to mitigate that risk. First, prune your cash. There's rarely reason to carry large amounts anymore. Think through actual cash needs, plus an appropriate cushion in case of emergency. Say you need a taxi home and it won't take your credit card. And carry just that much. Replenish as needed. Only carry your Medicare card when you are headed to an appointment that might require it. In the wrong hands, your Medicare number may be used for a variety of scams, including filing for false claims and reimbursement. Never carry a blank check in your wallet. The days when you might need one for a purchase are mostly in the past. What's typically left? A credit card, a debit card, a driver's license or state ID, health insurance cards other than Medicare, a modest sum of cash, and not much more. Choose one credit card and one debit card you wish to use the most and leave the others at home. Multiple credit cards are a goldmine for criminals who can easily charge items online or send runners to different stores. Take everything out of your wallet and sort it all with an eye to paring it way back. Remove old receipts, business cards, single store credit cards, and reward cards. Do not carry a house key in your wallet. Assume crooks will find your address from the contents and quickly show up there. Consider carrying a wallet multi-tool. Made from sheet metal and credit card size, it turns screws, opens bottles, and helps with small emergencies. Copy the front and back of all the health cards you've chosen to carry and store the copies in a safe place. Electronic wallet trackers are available, but most have a range of 400 feet or less. They are more for finding a lost wallet than a theft. Likely you can skip this. Think about losing the photos as well. Don't tip off criminals to your family or standard of living. Best to show off the grandkids or vacation shots via digital images in a secure repository you can access on your phone. And the final tip, in particular, remove your Social Security card. You do not need it for daily use, and criminals can use it to open lines of credit in your name or sell it to another criminal for use. Now let's go over to AARP, the magazine. There's an article, Stress and the 70-plus Body. It's rather lengthy, so we won't get to all of it today, but let's get started. The older we are, the more damage chronic stress can cause to our health. But older adults can develop a superpower that keeps its harmful effects at bay. This article is by Oliver Browdy. A 6-year-old feels stress on the first day of kindergarten. A 12-year-old feels stress at a soccer playoff game. And so it continues on into young adulthood, middle age, and life's further reaches. The triggers of stress may change over the years, but the phenomenon of a stressful moment, that sudden eruption of strong physiological and emotional reactions we have all felt in ourselves, mostly remains the same. The difference is how it affects us. With age, our bodies act more intensely to stress. Its effects on our health can become more toxic, and once triggered, our bodies take longer to return to baseline. As older adults, we may have fewer acute stressors, like screaming kids or screaming bosses, but we are more apt to be faced with chronic challenges, like illness, financial insecurity, or caregiving situations that can repeatedly trigger stressful reactions over the span of years, even decades. But there is good news, too. For while age may erode our natural defenses against stress, it also endows us with powerful new weapons with which to fight back. Why we stress less? Polls show that older Americans, who are healthy and socially connected, are better at handling stressful situations than younger ones. Case in point, a little radar blip known as COVID-19. 94% of the Americans killed by the disease were age 50 and older. Adults age 65 and older make up only 17% of the U.S. population, but accounts for 76% of COVID deaths. Yet, a 2021 University of Michigan poll conducted in the throes of the pandemic found that 65% of adults age 50 to 80 rated their mental health as excellent or very good. And a 2020 AARP poll found that while 38% of those in their 40s reported being highly stressed, older respondents showed more resiliency. 33% of those in their 50s, 18% of people in their 60s, and just 13% of adults 70 and older reported high stress levels. Now, before we go on with this part of the article, there's a sidebar article here that I'm going to jump over to. Release valves, natural ways to tamp down the stress effect. Stress is defined as when you perceive that a task has overwhelmed your ability to complete that task, says Daniel Kirsch, president of the American Institute of Stress, a nonprofit in Weatherford, Texas. But we can prevent that perception from triggering a full-blown stress response, and here are some of Kirsch's best tips. Ask for help. If you are experiencing stress about your finances, for example, ask a professional or someone you trust to sit down with you and work out a budget. Financial planning is not part of stress management, Kirsch says, but accepting that you need to do it is. Take stress breaks. To charge your phone, you have to plug it in, says Kirsch. To charge your brain, you have to unplug it. Look for opportunities to stop multitasking. When you sit down to eat breakfast, just concentrate on enjoying breakfast. Don't plan your day. Use the quieting reflex. Smile inwardly to signal to your body that all is well. Then take one deep breath. Visualize hot air coming up through the bottom of your feet, through your body, and filling your lungs. And then exhale as you follow this sequence in reverse. Walk. Movement is an easy stress releaser. You don't have to go outside. You don't have to get on a treadmill, Kirsch says. Simply standing up and walking around your living room for a few minutes can help break you out of any stress cycle you may be locked into. Volunteer. Taking time out to help others is a uniquely powerful stress buster because it works for us on a number of different levels. Volunteer work combines the satisfaction we feel when we help someone with the social interaction that helps us feel less alone. and Make Your Bed. This was the title of a best-selling book by Admiral William McRaven, and Kirsch says that it's a great stress management advice. The first thing you should do each day is make your bed. It gives you a sense of control right from the start. Now let's go back to the main article, and we'll read one more section from this. What's going on here? Simply put, the older we are, the more adept we are at navigating away from potentially stressful situations, says Susan Charles, professor of psychological science at the University of California at Irvine. When we bring older and younger people into the lab, says Charles, and put them in an uncomfortable situation, older people are much more likely to say it's not as stressful. Young people are much more reactive. Studies have shown that compared with younger adults, older adults are much more likely to credit positive emotional stimuli and discredit negative emotional stimuli. One study has shown that older adults are 50% more likely to use proactive coping techniques learned during long lives to prevent stressful situations from developing in the first place, and are better able to reach a compromise with life's demands. These skills, Charles says, stem from three assets that older people have in greater abundance than younger people: life experience, self-knowledge, and time perspective. Older people are more likely to choose to disengage from minor problems, understanding that it's really not worth it to get upset about the small stuff. If an older adult is talking politics with someone they don't necessarily agree with, for example, they're much better than young people at changing the topic. In the same vein, older adults are much more likely to focus their energies on important relationships with close friends and family and less on peripheral acquaintances. They experience fewer stressful conflicts in these close relationships, and when conflicts do arise, they tend to rate them less negatively. This may explain in part why older adults reported less COVID-related stress. Their social networks were stronger. And when stress hormones won't relent, so yes, we grown-ups have developed techniques for coping with acutely stressful moments. But chronic stress remains an aggressive health foe for us, the ongoing drumbeat of health concerns, the pressures of caring for ailing relatives, and the increased anxiety around living on a fixed income are frequently challenges for older adults. These high-level challenges have a way of pushing your stress button day after day, week after week, year after year. Say you're struggling financially every time a bill arrives in the mail, or you are at the grocery store, instant money fears can trigger the flow of stress chemicals. This can impact the body, especially the older body, in less detectable but far more consequential ways, says Charles. And we will continue with this article next time. Now we're going to move on to AARP, the Bulletin, and this series of articles about modern things that we need to know how to cope with. Damn that ice. My neighbor is boasting about the heating system he added to his roof and gutters to prevent ice dams. Was he smart or did he waste his money? Roof heating and cables are a band-aid at best and generally not recommended except for very complex roofs. While they can mitigate ice-related damage to the roof, they can also shorten the life of the roofing material. Ice dams are formed when warm air from your home melts snow on the roof deck. Then, the water refreezes as it makes its way toward the gutter. The better solution is to better insulate and air seal your attic so all warmth stays inside your house. Bugs up on a mattress. I cough a lot at night. What bed maintenance should I do? Beds should be cleaned every 6 months, the Sleep Foundation recommends. Dust mites, dead skin, and dirt accumulate, even if you can't see it. Use this three-part routine. 1. Strip the bed and give your mattress a good vacuuming, which removes dirt and dust. 2. Cover stains with a layer of spot stain remover. Let it sit, wipe it off. 3. Bring on the steamer. You can buy a modestly priced unit or rent a professional grade one by the day. Steaming gives your mattress its final deep clean by eradicating stubborn bacteria. To solar or not to solar? My spouse thinks we'll save money by putting electricity generating solar panels on the roof, but we get less than 5 hours of direct sun a day. Is he crazy? Not when it comes to solar power. The general rule of thumb is that if you average 4 or more hours of peak sun on your roof per day, installing a system is worthwhile. Solar panels do work in cloudy weather or partial shade, or if there is a modest level of snow on them, but at much less efficiency. Talk to a local solar installer and also to neighbors who have installed systems. If rooftop solar isn't the best option for you, there are other options like community solar or changing your electrical sources through your utility. Now, under the heading of tech, give me the classics. My new car didn't come with a CD player, but I like listening to favorite albums when driving. Most new vehicles make it easy to connect your smartphone to your car using Bluetooth. Follow the instructions in your owner's manual. Once connected, you can play albums through the car, either by downloading them onto your device or via a streaming service like Pandora, Spotify, or Apple Music. Mom, I'm hungry. I can't get the QR code for the restaurant menu to work. Using QR codes is a two-part process. Pointing your phone's camera at it won't call up a menu, but rather a link to go to a website that features the menu. But that link isn't always easy to see. Once you spot it, tap it. That should open the menu. If a link does not appear, go to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store, search for QR Scanner, not a QR Generator, and download one of the free apps. That might work better. Should I spy? My kids don't want to connect with me on social media, but I like to keep up with their lives. Ask your kids whether they feel most comfortable with you following them or where. Many grown kids have different personas on different social media sites. One might be more appropriate for mom and dad. Particularly popular now is Be Real, a platform there where once a day you get a notice to immediately photograph yourself exactly where you are and to share it. Platforms like Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat also have close friends lists that your kids can use to limit parent unfriendly content to just their inner social group. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.